An opinion column by Michael Gunter. I met face to face with Öcalan. Here's how he can help bring about peace. Less than a year before Turkey captured him in February 1999, I met Abdullah Öcalan in Damascus, March 1998. I first saw him with some others in an apartment a couple of rooms away, but recognised him immediately. As an academic who'd been writing about the Kurds in Turkey sympathetically since the mid-1980s, several years before most others in the West developed their interest, I was invited by the PKK authorities to visit Öcalan after making a number of inquiries about doing so. I was met at the Damascus airport and taken to a hotel for a rest. A few hours later, I was taken by car in a circuit to my destination. Presumably, the roundabout way was to prevent me from knowing exactly where I was going. On our first meeting, we ate with several others in the Damascus apartment. Ali Kazi, the son of the famous Kazi Mohammed, who had been president of the Mahabad Republic in Iran in 1946, served as the translator. Unfortunately, we needed a better translator. Nevertheless, I liked Ali Kazi very much, and through him, did get to converse with Apo on many topics. My second meeting with him took place a short distance outside of Damascus, in a nondescript structure off a main highway. Inside the walled compound, I found a surprisingly impressive villa and a garden. Armed guards kept watch from the roof of the villa. Attached to the villa compound was another, larger, walled compound containing simple living quarters for some 170 male and female fighters, an open green area, a cemented athletic area, and a life-size gilded statue of Massim Korkmaz, a PKK commander killed earlier in combat in 1986. Each of my meetings with Öcalan lasted for some 6 hours and included lunch. I found the Kurdish leader an engaging and polite host. During lunch breaks, for example, he showed me the pigeons he kept. He also let a honeybee alight on his finger and mused how it was half sweet and half poison. On my second day, I was invited to play volleyball and football with him and his followers. When formally posing for a picture, Öcalan turned deadly serious and rather wooden, but at other times he smiled easily. His conversations were often very animated. He showed a surprising knowledge of international tennis stars, deeming Andre Agassi his favourite. He told me that he admired tennis because it involves strategy as well as strength and power. In our first meeting, Öcalan spoke in Kurmanji, a Kurdish dialect I was told he'd recently learned to speak much better. The second day, he spoke in Turkish. When I asked him why he was fighting against Turkey, he replied, "In Turkey, they say there are no Kurds, that they don't exist. The government say this. Even the professors at universities say this. The Turks only accept the Kurd who denies he's a Kurd. Only a dialogue between Turkey and its Kurds can get the victims out of this continuing trap." 25 years later, I think progress has been made because Turkey no longer denies the existence of the Kurds. The problem is now, what should the Kurds' position be in Turkey? When I asked him how he had been able to keep up the fight so long, a question still very valid 25 years later, Öcalan told me, "Anyone who thinks as a Kurd in Turkey is with the PKK. If Turkey finishes the PKK, then it will only have the wall to talk to. I use Turkish stupidity to build a Kurdish movement. This is very important. Turkey's harsh, ignorant treatment of the Kurds has helped give birth to a greater sense of Kurdish nationalism. I use Turkish mistakes to build up my power." 25 years later, Öcalan's words still ring true. Finally, when I asked the Kurdish leader what type of settlement he sought with Turkey, he declared, "I accept the current Turkish border. Nobody wants Turkey to be divided. This is very important. I want to negotiate a just, democratic solution to this struggle. The Turks must accept the Kurdish identity. They should say in the constitution that there are other people in Turkey and accept a federal system, as in the United States, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium and Spain." Then Öcalan surprised me when he added, "If Ataturk were alive today, he would not act like the Turkish leaders are now. He would see the bankrupt result of his policy and change it." Of course, this was just speculation, but I've always thought that if Turkey and its Kurds could agree on some important constitutive principles and symbols like this, it might help lead to the settlement they both want. Michael Gunter is a professor of political science at Tennessee Technological University and the Secretary General of the EU-Turkey Civic Commission. He has written over 20 peer-reviewed scholarly books and 150 articles over the years.